Hi, welcome to a new year here at the Fantastic Forecast. Today, it's episode 400. Holy shit. I'm David Elliott, and I was thinking about stopping this podcast while I was still ahead. But I've never been ahead. Today, Fantastic Four 400 from May 1995. Even the Watchers Can Die by Tom DeFalco and Paul Ryan. And so the issue begins with an introduction by Stan Lee, where he briefly talks about the creation of the Fantastic Four, their enduring popularity, and mentions some of the creators who have made the FF such a great book over the years. Kirby, Ayres and Sinnott, inkers, Simonson, Byrne, Thomas, Friends, Ryan, DeFalco. Friends? He mentioned Ron Friends, who's never been the artist on the FF. Why did he mention Friends? He did forget to mention George Perez and Marv Wolfman, Steve Englehart, and John Harkness. How could he leave out John Harkness? Well, anyway, on to the main story, where we find the three members of the Fantastic Four, Johnny Storm, the Human Torch, Sue Richards, the Invisible Woman, and Ben Grimm, the Thing. By the way, in between issues 300 and 400, the FF rarely had four members. Either they had three members or five members. And now, here they are, with three members again, since, you know, Reed is dead.
I'm not dead!
So they're joined by Friends, and I use the word friends loosely, Huntara, Reed's half-sister from an alternate reality, Lijah the Skrull, Johnny's stalkery ex-wife, Kristoff, the junior Dr. Doom, Ant-Man, Scott Lang, soon to be a major motion picture star, inexplicably, Franklin Richards, the adult Franklin from the future, Nathaniel Richards, Reed's creepy father, Vibraxis, Black Panther's protege, pawned off on the FF, and Devlor, a young inhuman with a unibrow, also pawned off on the FF. Most of these characters are members of the short-lived FF spin-off book called Fantastic Force, which I do not recommend, even though I've never read it, but I still don't recommend it. So the group are standing there, looking up in awe, as they stand on the chest of a giant watcher laying unconscious on the ground, surrounded by a group of other watchers, all watching in horror as the other watcher has been knocked out by one of the giant alien robot creatures known as the Celestials. Sue tells Franklin they need help. He needs to use his mental powers to contact Uatu the Watcher. He's their only hope to avert disaster. He struggles for a moment, but eventually, he finds him. He tells his buddy, Huntara, to use her dimensional-spanning axe to bring Uatu to the alien planet that they're on now. And in no time at all, there he is, Uatu the Watcher, but he's not in a particularly talkative mood, but Sue finally gets him to open up a little. He says he's not able to interfere in the affairs of another race, something he's only done, pretty much every other time we've seen him. He's just there to witness the final fate of the One, and by the One, he's talking about that giant watcher splayed out on the ground. Sue asks why the giant Celestial attacked him, and Uatu explains that the Celestials and the Watchers have been in conflict for thousands of years, and the Celestials decided that the One was a threat to the cosmic balance of power, so they took him out. Ben jokes, "Jeez, you should have hired them guys who defended O.J. Oddly enough, that O.J. trial turned America into a race of watchers. Uatu says that the Celestial, Exitar, the Exterminator, has been gathering power for thousands of years, hoping to use his energies to wipe out the Watchers from existence. Why do they dislike the Watchers so much? Probably because they value their privacy, and the Watchers are a bunch of creepy peeping Toms. Huntara asks why the Watchers don't defend themselves. Uatu says he's unable to say anything else, but Franklin starts to use his powers, saying he's going to force answers out of him. But Sue yells at him, "Franklin, no, don't!" But it's too late. He reads the Watcher's mind, and there's a lot of information in that big old bald head of his. Too much information for Franklin to take. He yells out in pain and falls to the ground, Ant-Man notices something. Uatu, who keeps dropping pieces of some super weapon for the FF to find, has dropped another chunk of technology on the ground. And Ant-Man figures he can finally put it all together, and the super weapon is complete. Franklin reveals that when he read Uatu's mind, he saw what Aaron the Evil Watcher is up to. In the asteroid belt between Jupiter and Mars, he's setting up a device to save himself by converting the Milky Way galaxy into his own private pocket universe. And most of the FF and friends don't like the sound of that, so they plan to stop Aaron. Everyone, except for Nathaniel. I think he likes to disagree with Sue on everything just because he enjoys being the evil father-in-law from hell. He says they should stay and help the Watchers against the Celestials instead. And then Sue, surprisingly, agrees with him, saying they should stay and help Uatu instead of rushing off to face Aaron. So in the end, they decide to split up. Ben and Ant-Man join Franklin and the Fantastic Force as they travel off to face Aaron the Evil Watcher. Sue, Lijah, Johnny, Nathaniel, and the kid with the unibrow, they stay behind to fight the Celestials. That's a pretty bad decision. You would think more people would be needed to fight the Celestials and less to fight Aaron. Sue asks Lijah what she knows about the Celestials. And Lijah says she knows a lot, and it's all discouraging. She says the Celestials appear to be a race of genetic engineers who perform experiments on the highest life forms of various planets. The Skrulls think that maybe their shape-shifting powers are due to some kind of manipulation by the Celestials. So Johnny, Lijah, and Nathaniel fly off together, and Sue and the Unibrow Kid, they take off together in one of Sue's force fields. Meanwhile, Ben and his crew arrive at the asteroid belt, where they find Aaron the Evil Watcher working on his machine to convert the Milky Way galaxy into a pocket-sized galaxy. And Aaron's friends will be like, "Oh, is that a galaxy in your pocket, or are you happy to see me?" And Aaron will be like, "Oh, well, that's just a galaxy in my pocket." Now, the thing has a hankering to do some clobbering, but Aaron tells them it's too late. They can't stop him now. And then he summons up help to fight off the thing and the Fantastic Force. First, Blastar appears from the Negative Zone, followed by Dragon Man and the Frightful Four, members including the Wizard, Sandman, Medusa, and Pastepot Pete. For a watcher, Aaron seems pretty ignorant of the fact that the Frightful Four now have a different lineup. And apparently, this is not the real Frightful Four, Blastar or Dragon Man. Back on that other planet, the Human Torch is flying around Exeter the Executioner's head, shooting flames, but it's useless. It's like a tiny gnat trying to attack Godzilla. Sue yells out over to Johnny to conserve his energy. She tells everyone that they better find some other way to penetrate the Celestial's thick metallic armor. Nathan says, "I believe the answer is right under your pretty nose, my dear." What the hell, man? Is he talking about her mouth? I think he's talking about her mouth, which is right under her nose. Like, does he think that she should offer to blow Exeter? Then he would drop his pants and then they could get inside. Well, she wants to know what Nathan's talking about and demands that he tell her. So he tells her, and really, it's not as interesting as offering to blow the Celestial. He tells Sue that her force field energy probably comes from hyperspace, and hey, that might be the same hyperspace that is home to the Celestials. I don't know how he pulled that little nugget of information out of his ass. Well, he tells her to focus all of her strength and intensity on the Celestial, and maybe she can rupture his shell. And that's what she does. She focuses really hard, and crack, a hole opens up in the creature's leg. Back on the asteroid, more of the Fantastic Four's greatest villains show up, such as Red Ghost and his Super Apes, Annihilus, Mole Man and his monsters, and Devos the Devastator shows up too. So the Fantastic Force are busy fighting all these bad guys at once, and then Black Panther shows up, and Vibraxis wonders if he's there to help them or to fight them too. Back on that alien planet, Sue and the others have entered the Celestial's hole, and inside, it's all mushy and wet. But isn't it always like that when you enter someone's hole? Johnny says it looks like they entered one of the Celestial's arteries. But since there's all these, like, black blobs floating around, my guess would be that they entered the Celestial's intestines. But hey, this is a code-approved book, so it's an artery. Soon, they're not alone, They get attacked by these little mechanical bug creatures, obviously some part of the Celestials' immune system. Johnny and Lijah start to fight with the immune system bugs, and then back on the asteroid, Ben is fighting with the Mole Man's monsters when the Super Scroll shows up, and Ben grabs the creature that kind of looks like King Ghidorah and swings it around, hitting the Super Scroll with it. So then, more bad guys show up. This time it's the Submariner and a bunch of Atlanteans, and while all this chaos is going on, Kristoff tells Ant-Man to get closer to Aaron to get that weapon away from him. Back with Sue, she's alone with Nathan and that unibrow kid, who's turned into a big hairy monster, and they try to break through a wall, and Nathan blasts a hole in the wall. They walk through it, the floor starts to attack them. Sue lifts herself up safely away from the floor with a force field. Nathan tells her to go ahead while he and the kid free themselves. So she goes off down the hall by herself. Back on the asteroid, more enemies from the past are showing up, including the Silver Surfer, Terox. The story's pretty much a ripoff of FF100, where the FF just fight a bunch of replicas of their enemies from the past. And then Dr. Doom shows up, and Kristoff is ready to bow down before him, but this isn't the real Dr. Doom, and he's ready to shoot Kristoff dead, so Ant-Man jumps over and saves Kristoff's life. And of course, as you can imagine, Kristoff is extremely grateful. Right. Actually, no. He tells Ant-Man to unhand him. It must be really embarrassing to have your life saved by Ant-Man number 2. So now, Ant-Man is feeling like a pussy and decides that he's going to stop Aaron by himself, even if it cost him his life. Back inside the Celestial, Sue has reached the creature's head and finds what appears to be its brain, a big glowing thing of energy. She tries to touch it, which is totally not cool. You don't mess with someone's brain. And then she gets a big electric shock, and her mind is filled with memories of her trip to space back in FF number 1, and the cosmic rays, the crash landing on Earth, and her friends getting superpowers. And then, all this energy around her starts to take shape, and turns into a blonde woman who looks just like Sue Richards. The Celestial Energy Lady tells Sue that she should be proud of herself for making it so far. Next, she decides to offer Sue an explanation for what's been going on, and she starts with the Big Bang. You know it's going to be a long story when it starts with the Big Bang. So she explains that the universe formed and the Watchers came along with a mission to help other races, but one of those missions backfired and resulted in the destruction of an entire alien planet. So the Watchers decided to just be Watchers and not to interfere in the affairs of others. A philosophy known as minding your own business. So the One, that big honking Watcher, was created to survive the eventual big crunch and live on to the next universe. But the dude's presence was slowing up the cosmic expansion and speeding up the big crunch, and the Celestials figure that the One was doing this on purpose to end the universe before its time. Perhaps to start off again, guide the new universe by himself, correcting some of the mistakes of the past. Sue heard a similar story from the Dark Raider, so now she's pretty concerned. Next, she sees Ereshkigal, the Celestial Judge, raising his right hand, passing the judgment that the time has come to kill all the Watchers. Which sounds like a pretty good idea to me. If there was a guy on the moon watching me every time I play with myself, I'd be pissed. What I do with my private parts is between me and the 5 people who watch me on Chatterbait, and no one else's concern. So the process of killing all the Watchers begins. Exeter, the Executioner, has all this energy swirling around him. This beam shoots out of Exeter's head, striking the big Watcher, the One, on the ground, and killing him. All the normal-sized Watchers know they're probably next, but Uatu says, "Perhaps my brothers? Perhaps not." The Energy Lady tells Sue that the universe will be better without the Watchers, and Sue tells her, "Don't count on it," and she zaps the Celestial's brain with a force field, shattering it. Outside, we see all these energy beams bursting out of Exeter's body, and the giant Celestial vanishes. And Sue is left there alone, in the air, falling. But suddenly, she gets teleported away to the ground by Uatu the Watcher, where she rejoins Johnny, Lijah, Nathan, and Unibrow Boy. Uatu says they're safe for now, but eventually the Celestials will create another Exeter, just as the Watchers will regenerate the One, eventually in a few more thousand years. Sue says that thanks to evolution, mankind will be ready to deal with Exeter and the One next time. Back on that asteroid, Ben and the Fantastic Force are busy fighting tons of enemies from the past. Thundra is there, Hatemonger, the Hulk. It seems about just about everyone except for Machismo and the Top. My two favorites, by the way. Just then, the device Aaron the Watcher is using to turn the galaxy into a pocket universe, it starts to crack apart. It breaks down, crumbles, and Ant-Man comes popping out of it. He shrunk down inside the machine and grew himself to destroy it. You would think that he would be the one who got crushed, since the machine is made out of metal and Ant-Man only has the strength of a normal man. But, oh well, the machine is destroyed, and so are Aaron's evil plans. Aaron says that he will recreate that machine, but Uatu the Watcher appears and tells him to stop, and if he doesn't, he's gonna kick his ass. I'm off for seeing two tall dudes with big baby heads fighting each other with fists, but nope, they fight each other with these, swirling bands of cosmic energy. And eventually, Aaron is defeated and converted into a ball of pure energy to be used as the core for the regenerated version of the One. And then, another Watcher shows up, this one with a weird misshapen head, and tells Uatu that he has violated the oath of the Watchers, interfered in the affairs of man, and killed another Watcher. Sounds like he should get a medal, but no, he's gonna get punished. The other older Watcher zaps Uatu and says he's a Watcher no more and is banished from their race, leaving him as a pariah to be shunned and ridiculed. But of course, since he's being banished, he's not going to be around to be ridiculed, is he? It doesn't seem like a very bad punishment. So now Sue, Johnny, and the others are there on the asteroid too, with Uatu and everyone else, and all those fake bad guys have disappeared, and the ground starts to shake, and the structural integrity of the chunk of rock they're standing on starts to fall apart. So Uatu teleports everyone away. They appear on the Stealth Hawk, much to the surprise of that old man Boris, who was probably looking at porn on the ship's computers using that newfangled technology called the Internet. Ben turns to adult Franklin and tells him, "Your Fantastic Force ain't half bad." Yeah, they're all bad. Of course, you got a long way to go before you equal the original Fabulous Foursome. Yeah, like 600 issues more to go. Sue tells Franklin that it's a shame that the Fantastic Force is working out so well. They could have used another member on the Fantastic Four. Ben seems surprised. "You're thinking about giving away Reed's slot?" he asks. "And she is. She is. But to who? Who? Kristoff? No. Lijah the Skrull? Nope. She offers membership to Ant-Man, who says he's flattered, but he doesn't belong in the Fantastic Four. Which is smart, very smart. He avoids getting tangled up in that horrible Fox movie deal. So Kristoff, he steps forward and says he'll accept the invitation to join the Fantastic Four instead. Ben and Johnny think that's a bad idea, but Sue doesn't give him a yes or no yet. Unibrow Boy, I keep forgetting his name, changes the subject, asking what's going to happen to the Watcher now. Sue says that she can't answer that question, but I have a hunch he'll continue trying to make the entire universe a better place for us all, and he'll do just fine. And that is the end of the main story for this issue. Surprisingly, for the 400th issue, they didn't bring back Reed Richards. I remember how surprised I was when this issue came out way back when, that Reed is still gone. He's still dead.
I'm not dead!
Next up is a 3-page essay from Michael Martz, whoever that is, regarding why the FF is the world's greatest comic magazine. And then we head into the backup story titled In Memoriam by Tom DeFalco and Paul Ryan. The story takes place at a memorial service for Reed Richards, where a surprisingly small number of other superheroes show up. There's She-Hulk, Captain America, Spider-Man, Black Panther, Silver Sable. Silver Sable? Why her? Tony Stark and Iron Man. What's up with that? Thor and, Thor. I guess one of them is that horrible Thunderstrike character. There's Crystal, Quicksilver, Silver Surfer, Nick Fury, the Submariner, and Moon Knight. I'm just kidding, not Moon Knight. Ant-Man and Johnny are greeting the heroes with handshakes. Ant-Man doesn't like having Namor around, knowing that this dude probably is going to make moves on Sue. Kristoff comes in, not wearing his Doctor Doom armor, looking like a normal little kid, but giving Ant-Man a hard time, telling him that he makes a good usher. Sue isn't in the room because she's upstairs in her bedroom looking at a photo of her dead husband.
I'm not dead!
Johnny comes in and tells her it's time for the service, and they start talking about what a great guy Reed was, and remembering his plans for the rocket ship, and how Ben didn't want to go because of concerns about cosmic rays. And then Ben enters the room, and Sue says she feels embarrassed how she conned Ben into going on that rocket flight all those years ago by calling him a coward. So they snuck onto the launch pad, stole Reed's ship, and just like Ben said, they encountered cosmic rays, and they all ended up with really cool superpowers. Except, ironically, Ben Grimm himself, who didn't want to go in the first place. He was turned into a disgusting rock monster, and they decided to form the Fantastic Four and devote themselves to protecting mankind and seeking out and confronting the unknown. And this is a mission they will continue to pursue, even though Reed Richards is dead. I said, even though Reed Richards is dead. Oh, come on.
I'm not dead!
So that's the end of the backup story. On the letters page, they did a poll of the 10 best issues of the Fantastic Four, and the readers voted, and the results were published there in issue 400. Most of the winners make sense. You got number 10, FF Annual 3, number 9, FF 39, number 8, FF 236, number 6, FF 350, number 5, FF 285, number 4, FF 48, number 3, FF 51, and number 2, FF 40. But then you have number 7, FF 358, Whatever Happened to Alicia? And number 1, the number 1 best FF story of all time as voted by the readers in 1994 is FF 381, The Death of Reed and Doom by Tom DeFalco and Paul Ryan. What the hell, man? I mean, obviously, Tom DeFalco and Paul Ryan have large families who must have voted many, many times in this poll, because there's no way, no way, are FF 358 and 381 in the top 10, or even the top 100 issues of all time. So anyway, that's it for this episode. You can find other episodes at iTunes or find them all at www.podcastff.blogspot.com. If you have any questions about the Fantastic Four, about this podcast, or if you need relationship advice, you can email me at podcastff@gmail.com. So, I gotta go now. I'm gonna go put on my shoes with the self-tying laces, hop on my hoverboard, and head on down to the local movie theater. I got a fax from a friend of mine, and he wants to go see Jaws 19. So long, kids. This podcast is over.
An old man turned 98. He won the lottery and died the next day. It's a black fly in your Chardonnay. It's a death row pardon 2 minutes too late. Isn't it ironic? Don't you think? It's like rain. Goodbye.